Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
Listen to you NPRing the open of this show. You know, they're never going to have us.
No, they got to have us. Listen to that intro.
This show belongs on a Sunday morning at like 9 a.m., squeezed in between like hard economic talk and...
Yeah, Prairie Home Companion.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That's
think
where
about how the lead-in numbers that Prairie Home Companion could get off of having this show.
Imagine how confused our country's aging people will be ending that show and beginning this one.
Oh, that is an ugly stereotype that is based on data.
Truly is.
I saw a review on our iTunes that sort of scolded us for being embarrassed about being Star Trek fans. And I kind of wanted to talk to you about it because I think that we were sort of both surprised to discover that we could talk about Star Trek. Like, we've hung out a million times and it's never come up once. And then we were joking around on Twitter one time and it just like went really deep, really fast. And I think that that's because...
That's one way to put it.
I don't lead with Star Trek knowledge in typical social conversations. Do you?
Yeah, it was sort of like the challenge coin equivalent of nerd conversation. Like,
yeah.
Like it's not something that I betray in normal conversation when I'm a man about town.
Right. We were the dudes who knew each other but didn't know each other's sexual orientation bumping into each other in a gay bar in the 70s.
Right.
That was sort of the situation.
Right, exactly.
Not to like diminish the struggle of the gay rights movement or anything, like we've come a long way and that's
Look,
a great thing.
This is a show that will diminish all types of people. We're pretty equal opportunity in terms of of who we diminish on any given episode. I think we're terrible people, and we apologize.
The joke tends to be on us at the end of the day.
I mean, speaking to that shame, I mean, I think initially it was easy to feel embarrassed by the idea that we were going to dedicate our lives to this show. I mean, that is laughable, right?
Right. Well, but like, I also sort of, I feel like the people that just like wear it on their sleeves and are very public with what they're big fans of are a lot stronger internally than I am in a lot of ways, you know? Like, I don't wear any sports stuff outside because I wouldn't want to get in a conversation with somebody about a team that they disagree with or whatever. I don't tend to telegraph my political leanings unless, you know, I feel like there's a certain comedic upside in it for me. Like,
you cover up your full sleeve gang affiliated tattoos whenever you go out.
Yeah. And
you just don't want that kind of trouble.
Enthusiasts don't have that fear. So please don't think that in us being embarrassed to be doing this show, that should reflect on anybody that is listening, you know? You do you, we'll do us.
Yeah. Yeah, and don't let that be a reason to ding us the stars on iTunes, you fucking jerks.
Yeah, I think that was a 4-star review. It's like, why even bother?
Yeah, but here we are talking about it to open the show. So message received. He got what he wanted.
Yeah.
Let's just cut all this out. We've got a real whiz banger of a show today.
A real humdinger.
Yeah, I mean, what we've got coming up is season 1, episode 21, Symbiosis, an episode that was written by Nancy Reagan herself.
I had so many references to Nancy Reagan written in my notes. You beat me to it.
That was a race to the Nancy Reagan joke, and now you can just strike through all of them.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I'll add is that it's a little surprising she didn't have a walk-on cameo. You know, Nancy Reagan did look pretty alien-ish at this point.
Oh, yeah.
In the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, Nancy Reagan looked like DeForest Kelly with all that makeup in the first episode. So
yeah.
They wouldn't have had to do much to age her.
But we haven't gotten to the part where it is revealed that this is an after-school special about drugs. And that is a real reveal in this episode. I mean, it is.
Yeah, it begins real innocently. You think you're going to get a cool Star Trek episode, and then you get a fucking lecture.
So the Enterprise is taking a look at some kind of crazy star. They have to put a black dot over the star on the main view screen because it's so bright. But it's it's very active. There's lots of coronal ejections and sunspots and stuff like that, and it's
have you noticed that that they do that thing? I'm starting to notice a pattern when they put things on the viewer. Have you noticed this? So they'll put something on the viewer and it'll be super small, and invariably someone asks to magnify it. I'm wondering why, when they put something on the viewer, it just doesn't already begin as magnified. What's up with that?
There's definitely times when they're there's a ship approaching. And Captain Picard is like, are we in visual range yet? And they're like, whoa, we can try. And they put something on that's really small, and they're like, magnify that. And it just pops to full screen.
It's sort of like the movie thing where you can just enhance anything in a computer scene. Enhance grid G12.
Yeah. There's some great episodes of this show that do that.
Yeah.
But we haven't gotten to them yet. So as they are getting closer and closer to the sun, they're really testing the shields of the ship, you know, systems are shutting down. There's a lot of techno babble about what's going on with the ship, and you know, Wesley's computer system, you know, starts shorting out, and arcs of electricity are rippling around it, and Deanna Troi tells the captain that people are starting to get real on edge all over the ship, and he gets on the radio to reassure them, and they get closer and closer, and then suddenly everybody's attention is diverted because they're picking up a distress signal on a nearby planet, or in orbit of a nearby planet. And this distress signal is coming from a freighter called, what's it called?
Oh man, I didn't write it down.
Sanction.
Really?
Yeah, it's called Sanction. Why is it called Sanction?
That's a terrible name. That's worse than Drake.
But anyways, Sanction is in trouble and is in a decaying orbit around the fourth. I think it is, I can't remember if it's the third or the fourth planet. But
they're in real serious shit, and no one seems to care.
Yeah,
on their ship, I mean.
Yeah, and it's like this is a very weird moment because they're kind of like the view screen is blurry when they get on FaceTime with the captain of the ship, who's kind of a young man. It's hard to see him. It's hard to understand what they're saying. And he's very casual and very disconnected from what's going on. And it's, again, a really different type of acting than we're used to seeing on the show. Like, this guy is doing a great like realistic performance mm-hmm. of like a stoner who doesn't give a shit about anything. Like he's really nailing it in a way where it's like, this is the most natural acting performance we have yet seen on this show. And it's episode 22 or whatever.
Yeah, you'd think the name of the ship is like USS Spin Doctors or something. It's real. They're really chilling with the most over there.
Yeah. Yeah, the USS Hate Ashbury. The Enterprise, I think Data like scans the ship and he's like, oh, like they just need this type of coil. We have one in our cargo hold. We can just send it to them. And Captain Picard's like, that sound good to you guys? And they're like, do you guys know how to install it? And Picard turns to Riker and is like, who is this asshole? And how is he in command of a ship if he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing?
Yeah, he's kind of like besmirching the good name of a starship captain.
Captain, how long have you been in command of this freighter?
7 years. This is my 26th voyage to Freca.
And you don't know how to align a control coil?
It's never come up.
Can anyone else over there do it?
Oh, hold on, I'll ask.
It becomes clear that nobody on the ship has really got their act together enough to do anything with the help that the Enterprise can provide, and all that can be done is beaming everybody off the ship before the orbit decays so much that the ship explodes.
So the ship is spiraling towards the planet. It's starting to get cooked, and so Tasha runs to the transporter room to see if she can't beam them back. So
I guess we're supposed to understand that Tasha is like the awesomest at the transporter at this point.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, every time there's been an instance where they absolutely positively needed someone beamed back,
yeah,
which should be every time, but is only occasionally in the context of this program, she runs over to the transporter room and gets it done.
Yeah, when it's a tight spot.
This time being no different, she calls over to the other ship from the transporter room, and she's like, look, we got to link together our transporters, so we can use their combined power to make this work, because the star that they were studying moments before is casting off all of this interference. So,
right, and the guy gets back to her and he's like, "You can do that."
Yeah, and I think there's a moment where Tasha turns to Riker and is like, "Do they even want to live through this? Like,
yeah.
Why aren't they even trying?"
The one thing that kind of breaks down here is that. The way it's cut for the commercial break is they kind of build up this tension that they're going to beam everybody over. They engage the transporter. What beams over is a bunch of barrels. And they're like, what the fuck? And then there's like kind of a bunch of back and forth between the transporter room and the bridge. And it's like, and then it just suddenly all resets. Like they just do the same four things again. They're like, they didn't beam over the first time. What are they, idiots? And they finally get four out of the six people that were on board this ship.
So two of the people they beam up will come to know as T-John and Romas. and they're like the disheveled, 3-day beard growth, kind of ratty clothed. One of them has got like seersucker overalls on. Like, they're real, like Romas is the Cletus of the group.
Yeah.
Most definitely.
And Tijan, folks will recognize as the guy that played Captain Kirk's son in The Wrath of Khan.
Right. And the third Star Trek movie and the sixth Star Trek movie.
Oh, yeah. Of course, the other two are... oh, shit, I lost their names. The other two are Sobe and Langor. I think it's Langor who is Khan's kind of right-hand man in The Wrath of Khan. So
yeah.
It's a little
Judson
reunion.
Scott.
Yeah.
You know the story with him that I read when I was doing the research for this episode is that that actor, the guy who played Khan's number one on The Reliant. So
that Khan will aben.
Yeah.
You remember that scene
yes.
when Khan says,
I shall avenge you.
He has a ton of lines, you remember? Like he is one of the main characters of that movie.
Totally.
Do you know he goes uncredited?
No, really?
Yeah. his agent totally fucked him. So his agent was negotiating with Paramount and was like, look, this Judson Scott guy is like stealing the show here. I think we got to move him up the actor cloud to maybe even above the title, you know, in a place of prominence.
Yeah.
And Picard's like, and Paramount's like, get fucked. We're not even going to give him a credit at all.
What?
And that's what happened.
That seems so illegal.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened.
That is some gangsterific Hollywood shit.
Yeah, and I think it wasn't long after that that there became an actors union.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply. Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Anyways, all four of these idiots are really freaked out about this barrel that that they sacrificed to the other people on the ship to beam up. And they're all really relieved to find out that it's in the hold of the Enterprise. But like, no sooner are they up there than they start fighting over who owns it. Because I guess the other cargo on board this freighter that didn't get beamed up was supposedly the payment for the this barrel, which so we come to understand that the clean, glossy people are Brekkians, and the shitty, disheveled guys are Ormarans?
Sure.
Ornarans? Ornarans. It's hard to read that because it's like an R and an N right next to each other.
Right. Ornarin.
Ornarans.
When you are of that planet, you are ornery.
Hey, thanks, Dad.
Boo. So the story is this, the thing inside the barrels is Felicium, which has nothing to do with the show Felicity, which I was disappointed to find out.
Oh, Dad, you're back.
Oh, I love Carrie Russell.
The story is that it's a medicine. So the everybody on Ornara has this plague, and the only way they keep it at bay is Felicium. It's not a cure, but it manages the sickness, so they can kind of live with a chronic illness and take this pill once every 3 days. But the two Ornarans that we have here to deal with are already looking real shitty, and it starts to become a concern. Like the captain is worried they might have brought their stupid plague on board, and the doctor starts looking into it, and you know, like their ownership dispute over the medicine goes from the wardroom to the sick bay. It's like, it's just like these guys will not shut up about who owns this stuff.
It's as simple as this: the goods were never delivered. They were destroyed with your ship.
Hence the deal was incomplete. Hence possession of the Felicium remains ours.
We need it.
Yeah, and it becomes clear that after some investigation by the doctor that maybe, in fact, they aren't suffering from a disease and that maybe this Felicium has something to do with their illness.
Yeah. So, and she discovers this when the Breckens, like, consent to giving a dose to the two guys that are there. And you know, like their symptoms go away immediately. And the doctor's like, these dudes were fucking withdrawing. They are not like,
yeah. The way they shoot that scene too is totally like a heroin addict getting their works out and setting it up. And like they shoot each other.
Yeah. It's like the space rig.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I thought was super well done. Like, there's been plenty of science fictions that have had some drug that everybody takes and gotten creative with how they administer it. This is, like, the only example I can think of that seemed actually cool and sci-fi and not just, like, a dumb prop department jag.
Yeah, it sort of made me want to try some, right?
Mm-hmm. That shit looks dope.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're trying to kick our crack habits... He could do a lot worse than just trading that addiction for Felicium addiction.
So they are feeling great after shooting up. And this does not go unnoticed by Beverly, who starts to connect the dots.
Yeah, and she's got a real moral crusade going at this point, because it is the 80s and drugs are bad, and
also this is something she can fix. She's like, well, look, if this is just an addiction, we can synthesize something without any of the side effects, wean an entire planet off of this, and all of a sudden everything's cool again.
Right, but Captain Picard is quick to remind her that their place is not to cure societies of what ails them, and that would in fact be a prime directive violation of pretty significant amount, because they're coming to understand that the relationship between these two planets is that Ormara is where all of the industry in the system takes place. They make everything that both the Ormarans and the Breckians need to live, and the Breckians make one thing: they make Felicium, and the entire economy of their planet is based on exporting Felicium to Ormara. So the Breckians are like, yo, like this was like a year's worth of economic output for our planet. We can't just give it to the Ormarans. And the Ormarans are like, you are dooming us to death, because they do not understand that they are all just addicted to this substance.
Yeah, it's been going on for 200 years, so it's really all they know.
Yeah. As the bridge crew are sort of putting this all together, there's a really fucking obnoxious scene where Wesley turns to Data and he's like, Data, why do people do drugs?
and Tasha, being the coolest person on the bridge, is like
the cool aunt.
She turns a chair around and sits in it backwards, like the cool guidance counselor.
Yeah.
But it's artificial.
It doesn't feel artificial until the drug wears off. Then you pay the price. Before you know it, you're taking the drug not to feel good, but to keep from feeling bad.
And that's the trap.
All you care about is getting your next dosage. Nothing else matters.
I guess I just don't understand.
She stops just short of saying, and then you're chasing the dragon for the rest of your damn life, Wesley.
And she, like, she scratches the inside of one of her arms. Like, I think the subtext here is that she knows of which she speaks.
Yeah, yeah. She knows of what she speaks, but she doesn't resort to cracking an egg and then scrambling it to,
sure.
or, to make
her
point.
Smashing a frying pan across her kitchen. Unzipping her onesie and revealing a Dare shirt underneath. Seriously, it is so heavy-handed that it's basically a turn to camera. Like,
yeah.
It's a good 2-minute treatise on the danger of drugs. Kind of a bummer.
Yeah, and it is really the turd blossom on what would otherwise be like not a terrible episode.
Sure.
Like, it really, like, that scene just like reaches its like crappy didactic tendrils out into the rest of the episode and really brings it down a notch from where it would have been. It was a totally interesting and compelling story without that scene, and made its point without the beating us over the head with our own hypodermic needle moment.
I think many episodes ago I was bitching about how the show tended to bring up difficult social issues, but not necessarily resolve them or take a side. I think this was an example of the show trying to go all the way and taking a side, and it just really didn't work.
Yeah, they didn't have any experience with doing that.
Yeah.
So they like outsourced that scene to the writers of like, Different Strokes or something.
Yeah.
The Enterprise arrives at Ornara, and Picard and the Doctor walk in to talk to Sobi and Langor, and they're like, we really think you should give this medicine to them. And they're like, oh yeah, we're definitely going to. And Picard is like, oh, you guys know what's going on. You are like interplanetary rubber band men. And this is a scheme. Like, they have these people addicted, and they've got the good life. Like, all they have to do is cultivate this one crop and make this one drug, and they don't have to do anything else. They don't need to lift a finger. Everything else is taken care of for them. But what they don't count on is that Ornara's space fleet, it consists of three ships, one of which just was destroyed. The other two are totally broken down. So the captain, and a rather deft maneuver within the confines of the Prime Directive, says, okay, you guys can take this one shipment of Felicium down to your planet and organize like how payment is going to work, but we're not going to give you the parts that you are asking for to fix your other two ships, because that, in fact, would be the Prime Directive violation. And if your ships break down, you'll have to figure out how to fix them. And what he knows is that the entire planet will suffer greatly going through withdrawals that could be avoided if the Doctor just synthesized whatever her her methadone equivalent would be. But
yeah, Picard found a neat little loophole there.
Yeah, well, he's dooming them to some suffering, but not death, like they thought.
Right. I don't think Picard is against doling out a little bit of suffering if he can help it.
When I think the Arnarans like beam off the ship under the impression that they are going to their certain dooms.
Right. Right. Kind of a dark ending.
Yeah.
And I think by saying that, like, not a lot of fun as Next Gen episodes go.
No, it definitely held my interest. I keenly felt the conflict and stuff, but didn't have a cathartic ending, you know? I think that that's an interesting thing that the show is able to do, right? Like,
yeah.
if it's a Prime Directive issue, sometimes catharsis isn't available to them.
Right. I think that's the lesson. That's one of the lessons of the Prime Directive, is that the victories associated with that are often pyrrhic, right?
Totally.
My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which longer nurses the disease. You'll have to go again.
I think one of the cool scenes in this episode that we didn't talk about was the fact that T-John and Cletus can shoot electricity out of their hands. Or at least T-John is the only one that can demonstrate that power, right?
No, the Breckians do it too. There's like a whole fight scene at the beginning with
right
in the cargo bay. there's a great Yar line when she goes, "Gentlemen, behave yourselves."
And then also cops to the idea that they can't take away their weapons when their weapons are their hands that shoot electricity.
Yeah, there's definitely a little scene where she and Riker discuss the fact that this is an interesting security conundrum, that these guys are essentially electric eels.
Yeah. Yeah, and two episodes in a row, Riker gets ensnared in some sort of electrical field. In the last episode, he gets encased in that clear shield that Echo Papa 607 shoots at him. And then this time around, T-John gets him in the iron claw, the electrical claw, and holds him hostage.
Yeah. It's just, this man will die if you don't give me my drugs. And Picard's like, nah, you're not going to kill him. You're not a killer.
So Frakes, listen, you remember that last episode where you just stood really still and you had that scared look on your face? We need exactly the same thing this time around. Can you do it?
Yeah.
Frakes is like, Frakes. God, am I going to have to do this every episode?
Yeah. Is this why you guys hired me?
Yeah, he really sells it, though. Good job.
Good job, Frakes.
Good job, Jay Frakes. Did you come across a potential drunk Shimoda for this episode as you were watching?
Incredible! Drunk Shimoda!
Didn't really write one down. I mean, I guess if I could get as abstract as this, I would say that stupid scene with Wesley in the after-school special moment.
Right.
Was my drunk Shimoda. It was really pulling the isolinear chips right out of the warp core of this episode.
Oh, man. Well put. Yeah, if we could possibly call an entire scene a drunk Shimoda, that would be it.
How about you?
God, I mean, I had something else written down, but I don't think I could do better than that, really. Like, that was really brutal to watch. Like, and it was innocent Wesley Crusher asking two adult authority figures what drugs are about, and the authority figures basically saying, just say no.
Yeah.
Kind of brutal. I mean, and really, not to skip around too much in the story of The Next Generation, but, I mean, it does turn out Wesley becomes addicted to a drug down the road.
Does he, or is he, like, he's the only one? I thought he was the only one that goes unscathed by that drug.
Oh, man, you're right.
I can't remember.
Do you think it has to do with the speech he got from Tasha Yar, then? Is that why he's able to resist so long? We'll have to revisit this episode on that episode.
Yeah, whatever episode that is. I think that's the one with Ashley Judd, right?
Oh, yeah. Sure is.
He's trying to be cool for his date with Ashley Judd by squeezing one off, thinking about old Tasha Yar.
Is that what he's doing?
Then he remembers that piece of sage wisdom that she transmitted to him right before she bought the farm.
God, lock the door to your quarters, Wes.
if you can.
Yeah, no kidding.
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Well, what do we have coming up for our next episode?
Our next episode is Skin of Evil. A rescue mission turns to tragedy when one of the Enterprise officers is killed by an evil alien.
Doesn't get more evil than Armus, does it?
No, Armus is the evilest. He's like the root of all evil.
I think, you know, much like Symbiosis is an episode about the evil of drugs, Skin of Evil is an episode about the evil of the oil companies and corporations.
I thought you were going to say it was about the evil of skin.
Oh, no, could be. But yeah, they make the bad guy in this episode basically an oil slick.
Yeah. Yeah, they went down to the La Brea tar pits to shoot the exteriors for this one.
Yeah, I remember this one really well.
This one is seared in every Next Generation fan's memory because, spoiler alert, it's the one where Yar dies. And it's also the one where Riker takes an oil bath and you see his face coated in black oil.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's not how you want to go out, I think.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I don't even want to read about the reception to this episode because...
Fuck those haters.
Because I'm super jazzed.
Yeah.
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 All right, well, I'm looking forward to it. We will see you very soon on our next episode of The Greatest Generation. If you ever want to reach out to either of us, you can find us on the Twitter. I'm at CutForTime, and he is at BenjaminAHR.
And use the hashtag GreatestGen if you're tweeting about the show. I always love to see all of those jokes that people are making and spotting things that we missed in episodes and stuff. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's
totally. Yeah, if you feel like it, leave us a nice review on iTunes. If you don't feel like it, don't do it.
Yeah. If you feel like leaving us a bad review, maybe take a walk instead.
Yeah, maybe fall down into an oil slick.
Maybe suck a lemon.
Yeah, do that. Our music is by Dark Materia. We love Dark Materia. We love this song, the Picard song, specifically. It bangs.
Yeah, that shit knock.
All right, and that, I think, will about do it for this episode. Ben, good pod.
Good pod, Adam. All right. I've been Ben Harrison.
I've been Adam Pranica. We'll see you next time.